This week's parsha is Mishpatim, and Mishpatim famously contains so many of the civil law, tort law, laws that govern between Adam l'makom, between Adam l'chaver, between one person and another person. Several years ago, we spoke about why perhaps these mitzvos appear right away after Matan Torah, after the giving of the Torah, laws that perhaps very much spoke to former slaves. Because these are all laws about that was just the opposite of what their experience was in Egypt. And Egypt is all about suffering, torment, and affliction, and people being taken advantage over, and people not being given rights. And this week's parsha, all these laws are all about respecting other human beings and being treating one another in a dignified fashion, even one's workers, even people. Society in general, perhaps, would take advantage of. The Torah is just the opposite, the kindness and the sensitivity and the compassion that must be directed towards other human beings certainly is something that must have spoken to former slaves. And it must have been something that was also very important to communicate to these former slaves to realize that what they experienced in Egypt is totally the antithesis to how God expects us to interrelate with other people. So that perhaps is the reason for all these mitzvos. However, what I want to focus on is the very end of the parsha. The very end of the parsha circles back to last week's parsha, where it once again describes Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah. The famous words of Naaseh V'Nishma appear in this week's parsha. I don't want to talk about why the Torah does this, why the Torah specifically interrupts Matan Torah with these laws, and why wasn't it all just put together in one place? But I want to focus on what struck me now as reviewing the Parsha is that the very last psukim, on some level, seem to be not a repeat. It seems to be alluding to something that happened previously, not that long ago in the Torah. And on the surface, the connections are so paramount and so clear. That must be the Torah is trying to equate something. The Torah is trying to send the message by highlighting these similarities. So let me explain. So the very end of the parsha describes the very end of Matan Torah, right? The whole Matan Torah experience that the Jewish people are around the mountain. God descends upon the mountain, right? In Parshas Yisro, it talks about the smoke and the lightning and then the thunder, the noise. And the Ten Commandments are given, are told to the Jewish people. Well, after all that, this is at the very, very end of the parsha. We're in this is Perek Chaf Dalet, Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe. Now God says to Moshe, "Alei Eliyahu Hara, I want you to come up to the mountain, Vayesham, and to be there." And it happens to be there is a machlokas here. Whether or not this is a reference to what happened right before Matan Torah, is this because we know it, in last week's parsha, Moshe is going up and down the mountain a couple of times. So is this the initial command that's just being repeated now once again, or is this Moshe now ascending the mountain after the Matan Torah to now go up and to learn about the rest of the Torah? Now the 40 days. And Moshe is now going to be on the mountain where God's going to be teaching him about all the other mitzvos and also giving him the actual luchos, the actual tablets, which unfortunately will lead to him breaking them 40 days later with the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf. No, is it alluding to that? And this command to go up, is this before the Har Sinai Matan Torah experience? Is right after it concludes? And I'll show you a pasuk in a second that perhaps will argue either way. But in any event, God tells Moshe, go up the mountain, Yesham, you'll be there, Ben Nelacha, Luchos Evan, I will give you there the stone tablets, Veha Torah, Veha Mitzvah, the Torah and the Mitzvah, and the commentaries discuss, what is this Torah? Is this the entirety of the Torah? Is this part of the Torah? Is this the mitzvah, some of the mitzvahs? Whole discussion. Asher kasavti lo rason, that I will write down to for you to teach them. So come up the mountain. Okay. So what happens next? Moshe gets up. Now he'll begin to listen to the imagery or the what's being described. So Moshe gets up, the Yoshua along with Yoshua his attendant, Moshe ascends the mountain of God. Zelazakanim and to the elders, Amar he said, Shvulanu vaza, you remain here. Right, you don't come with me, right? Me and Yoshua, we're going here. You stay here. Now, why is he talking to the elders? Because just before this, there was a whole party. There was a whole meal. At Har Sinai, again, we're given di additional details here in Parshas Mishpatim that there's sacrifices and Moshe and Aaron and Nadav and Avihu. This is all in Pasuk Tes. Mizikne Yisrael, the seven elders of Israel, they sort of leave the rest of the camp, and they encounter God. We're told, Vayachazu and they eat and they drink, so they're having their whole like separate party, like the VIP party of Har Sinai, right? It's like a business class. Everyone else was in coach around the mountain, and they got the better seats. They got the better meal. Okay, so Moshe is now with Aaron, he's with Nadab and Avihu, but now Moshe's going to first class, right? That the Zakanim are going to remain in business, and Moshe is going to first class. Him and Yoshua is accompanying him, and he tells the Zakanim, the elders, you remain here, and he continues. Vihine, and behold, so who's in charge? While I'm away, who's in charge? Vihine, Aaron v'Chor. Aaron and Chor, Aaron his brother, who is Chor? So Chor, according to tradition, is Miriam's son. It's Aaron's and Moshe's nephew. And according to one school of thought, Miriam married Kalev, so it's Miriam and Kalev's son. So Aaron and Chor, imachem, they will be with you. Right, why I'm not here, so you got any issues? Aaron and Chor, they're in charge. Me Val Dvarim, I am. Anyone's got words, anyone has something to say, something to be addressed, you go to them. Okay, Moshe goes up the mountain, and the cloud covered the mountain. Har Sinai, and the glory of God descended upon Har Sinai, Vechaseo Anan, Sheshes Yamim. And the cloud was upon it for 6 days. Now, 6 days, the commentators all struggle. What's the 6 days about? So either some suggest this is the 6 days of before Har Sinai, of before the actual giving of the Torah, because again, the Jews come to the wilderness of Sinai on the first day of Sivan. The Torah is not given either till the sixth or the seventh of Sivan. So it's referring to those 6 days. Or if it's the 40 days after the if it's the 40 days after the giving of the Torah, perhaps the first 6 days was something special. Maybe the first 6 days was like sort of Moshe preparing himself, needing additional time perhaps to meditate in order to then fully ascend the mountain and receive the rest of the Torah. It's a whole discussion. Vayikra el Moshe b'yom ha'shvi'i mitoch ha'anan. And finally, the seventh day, Moshe's ready. Now God really communicates to him. Amare kvod Hashem ke'esh ocheles brosh ahar, and you can sort of this imagery that on top of the mountain is like this like fiery furnace that's on top of the mountain. The Jewish people look up at the mountain, and they see like the smoke and the fire, and like yeah, they're far back, but that's what they see. Vayavo Moshe mitoch anan, Moshe comes into the cloud. Vayal ahar, and he goes up to the mountain. Vayim Moshe bahar arbim yom v'arbim laila. And he's on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. And that's how the parsha concludes. Of course, we know the conclusion. The end of those 40 days doesn't end off so well because then you have the Chet Egel, the sin of the golden calf. Now, what does this perhaps remind you of? What similar story or imagery in the Torah is perhaps being conveyed here? So I don't think it's an exact parallel. But I want to suggest that if you just look at the players here, the people who are being discussed, you will know that all these people appear together in a earlier incident in the Torah. Who are the main players here? Moshe, Yehoshua, Aaron, and Hur. Where do those four people all appear earlier? So if you recall, they all appear together at the time of Melchemas Amalek, of the war with Amalek. It's remarkable. All four of them are in that incident. This takes us back a couple of parshios to the Bshalach. I'll just read the few psukim. At the end of Parshas Bshalach, Vayavo Amalek, and Amalek came, right? The Jewish people have now left Egypt, crossed the sea, finally safe, and all of a sudden they're attacked by Amalek. They wage war with the Jew, against the Jewish people in this area of Rephidim. By Yomer Moshe, and Moshe says, El Yoshua, he says to Yoshua, Bachar lanu anashim, select men, v'tzei lachem Amalek, go wage war against Amalek. Bachar anochi nitzav al rosh hagiva. Tomorrow, what will I do? I'm going to go up the mountain. All right, tomorrow I'm going to go up the mountain. Amatei Elokim biyadi, and the staff of God will be with me. Ayas Yoshua kasher amar lo Moshe lachem Amalek. Yoshua listens to wage war against Amalek. Moshe, Aharon, the Hor, and Moshe, Aharon, the Hor, Alu, Rosh HaGiva, they go up the mountain. All right, so here Aharon and Hor are actually accompanying Moshe up the mountain, as opposed to our story at the end of Mishpatim, where Aharon and Hor remain down below. Vayak Asher Yerim Moshe, Yado Gavar Yisrael, and Moshe would hold up his hand, right, the famous imagery from the war with Amalek. And you'd keep his hands up, the Jews would be victorious. But if he put his hands down, then the Jews would be in trouble. But his hands became very heavy. So he put a stone that he could rest under the stone. He could sit down. And it was Aaron Hur who supported. Right, who it was Aaron and Hur who held up his hands, and his hands were faithful. Rashi is here to pray to God. It was a simple praying to God till the sun set. And Yeshua was able to weaken Amalek by the sword. And there the story concludes. God tells Moshe, remember what happened, write this down. Put it in the ears of Yehoshua that I will surely blot out Amalek. I will surely blot out Amalek from the heavens. And he builds a Mizbeach. He calls it Hashem Nisi. And Melchamah L'Hashem Amalek b'dor ador. So again, I think it's just like begging us to notice this comparison between these stories, that we have the same personalities involved in these stories. And there's a mountain that's involved, and the roles are a little bit though changed here, right? Here, in our parsha, it's Moshe is being accompanied by Yoshua, right? They're going together towards the mountain, and it's Aaron and Hur remain behind. In the stories of Amalek, it's Moshe who sends out Yoshua. Yoshua is the one who's doing the fighting, and it's Aaron and Hur who are supporting Moshe's hands on the mountain. Right? So there Moshe's going on that mountain, but he's going with Aaron and Hur. In our parsha, Aaron and Hur remain down below. So again, it's not an exact parallel, but there's too much here to again, I'm sure someone mentioned this. I didn't see anyone. It just struck me as I was looking at this a little bit earlier. There's too much here. There's too many similarities between these two stories. And I think, to understand this, the biggest question is Yoshua, I believe, here in all of this. Because Rashi himself, in our parsha, is troubled by Yoshua's role here. Right? Rashi says the following, Vayaka Moshe of Yoshua Mishar So. The Moshe gets up, right? God told Moshe to ascend the mountain, be given the Luchos, the Torah, the mitzvah, and he goes with Yoshua, his attendant. And But we know that it's only Moshe who fully ascends the mountain. Right? The Torah then says, Vayakam, right? He goes with Yoshua, but Vayakam Moshe, but then it says, Vayal Moshe Har Elokim. And we know from Parshas Kisisa in a few weeks with the sin of the golden calf, right? Yoshua is at the foot of the mountain. And he's far away from the camp and he hears all this noises. And right while the people are worshiping the golden calf, and Yeshua is a little confused, like, what's going on with all that noise? Is there a war going on? Because the last time, right, there is a war. In the previous war, they're all together. There's a war with Amalek. So maybe there's another war going on. But he's not with Moshe. Moshe knows exactly what's happening because God told him on the mountain. Moshe comes down, he breaks the tablets, and he walks back with Yeshua. So Rashi says here in our parsha, Lo yadati mativo she Yoshua kam. Why is Yoshua mentioned here? Like, what's Yoshua doing? Because Yoshua is not going up the mountain; he's just accompanying. Moshe Rabbeinu. And I saw in the Sefer the Oznaim LaTorah. He says, Rabban Tamu. Many people ask, Lama lakach es Yoshua imo? Why was Yoshua taken here? What role is Yoshua playing? He's not going where Moshe is going. Only Moshe is ascending the mountain, not Yoshua. So this is by the Torah Zalman Saratskin. He suggests, well, you know what? Moshe was afraid maybe he wouldn't make it out alive. Right? That it's like similar to the Kohen Gadol, he says in Yom Kippur. You always said that we'd have another Kohen ready in case the Kohen Gadol wouldn't be able to complete the avodah, either become tamei or God forbid, he wouldn't make it out of the kodesh kedoshim alive. He needed someone else to complete the avodah. So Moshe is going up the mountain, he's encountering God. You know, we know you encounter God, you see God, you know your life can be in danger. You're not supposed to have such a close encounter with the divine. So perhaps Yoshua was there just in case, God forbid, something would happen to Moshe. But Rashi in our parsha says, "V'omer ani," I say, that you know what Yoshua was doing? He was being a good student. He was Malava the Rebbe. He was accompanying his master, his teacher. He's escorting his Rebbe. Moshe shouldn't be alone. He can't go up the mountain. Only Moshe can go up the mountain, but at least someone should go with Moshe all the way to the mountain. So I like to take that just one step further, maybe now to again, I'm just, this is an initial thought, probably a lot more to develop here, but again, I think the key is Yoshua in all this, because you go back to the story with Amalek, right, it's Yoshua who goes, fights the war, and it's Yoshua who God tells Moshe to tell Yoshua not to forget this. We know, of course, that Yoshua is going to be the future leader of the Jewish people. He's the one who's going to ultimately lead the Jewish people into the land of Israel. Right? He hasn't been appointed yet, but we know, right, that that's the role he's ultimately going to play. His initial role, our initial introduction to him in the Torah, is that he's a warrior, right? He's the general. He's the one that Moshe instructs to go get some men, get some soldiers, and go fight Amalek. He's the ones on the battlefield. Moshe is the political leader, the religious leader. He's back at base, but Yoshua is the one. He's the chief of staff. He's out on the field and he's engaging in battle. And he has to engage in battle. What's Moshe doing? With the help of Aaron and Hur, he's praying. He's davening. In fact, the Gemara asks, you know, what's the whole thing with keeping his hands up? Is this like some magic trick? If he keeps his hands up, they're going to win. If the hands are down, they're going to lose. Like, what's going on here? The Gemara says, no, it was symbolic. It was symbolic of the Jewish people direct their faith to God in heaven. They believe that God is with them. They turn to God in prayer. Then they'll be victorious. But if they turn away from God, so then they're not going to be as successful. They have to fight. They have to do their stalas. They have to recognize that ultimately Hashem is going to determine whether or not they're going to be successful or not. So Yeshua is out there battling. Yeshua is out there fighting. And back home, it's Moshe, Aaron, before they're praying, they're davening. What's so interesting is that, and we seem to be this, you know, God seems to already be hinting something about what's going to be in the future. when in the end of Parshas, at the end of Parshas Bishalach with the Malek, we he's Moshe specifically instructed that don't forget that Yeshua has to remember this, right? That again, the exact words are. Yoshua. Put it into the ears of Yeshua. Why does Yeshua have to know this? Moshe should know this, right? At this point, Moshe is going to lead the Jewish people into Israel. He's the ones who have to encounter Amalek. So obviously, you see that the Torah is hinting that maybe Moshe, at this very early stage, was sort of being told that he's not going to ultimately finish the task. Ultimately, the baton is going to be handed to Yeshua. And he's gonna have to be the one to confront Amalek. He's the one who's gonna have to deal with this. So now, me, it's already now in Moshe's mind that Yeshua is gonna play this very significant role for the Jewish people. But until this point, he's been the warrior. He's been he's the chief of staff. He's part of the army. I want to suggest is that what was Moshe doing in our parsha? He had to teach Yeshua. That to be a Jewish leader, besides to be a warrior, you have to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But he wasn't on the mountain with Aaron and Hur with the hands raised. He was dealing with the reality of war, the harshness of war, strategy, and and rallying the troops and motivating them. At this moment of Har Sinai, of this moment of spirituality, of connection to Hashem. Moshe takes Yoshua. Again, Rashi asked the question, what's Yoshua doing here? Yoshua Khan. What role does he have? Right? He's not ascending the mountain, but he's being taken as close to the mountain as possible. He's the one who needs to understand exactly what Moshe is doing. Moshe is encountering Hashem. And Moshe is having this revelation, this connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That he has to realize that is part of a Jewish leader, right? We know later on in Parshas Shoftim when the Torah tells us about the laws of a king. So besides, the king being ruling over the people and dealing with the day-to-day affairs, the king has to have the Sefer Torah with him at all times. He has to write his own Sefer Torah because ultimately he's guided by Hashem, or he's just working for our HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so I think Yeshua is being prepared here to be this ultimate leader of the Jewish people. Initially, he's this warrior. He's a fighter. He has to know that you have to fight, and you have to know how to deal with that, and to lead your troops. But now he's also being taught about the spiritual component, about the connection to Hashem. Aaron and Hur are playing this role of the secondary role, right? They're the ones who are being so supportive, and they're the ones who are. Prominently supporting Moshe in this endeavor, and whatever Moshe needs, whether it's holding up his hand or staying with the camp during this point of Har Sinai, right? They're playing those critical roles, but this foursome, all of them together are creating this what is necessary for the Jewish people to be su successful. And again, I think the most important person here is, in fact, ultimately Yeshua. And Yeshua ultimately is the successful leader of the Jewish people. He brings the people into the land of Israel. He's able to conquer the land, able to divide the land, and all that training was set up right now at these early stages of the Jewish people in the desert. And Moshe's on the mountain. Moshe's always on the mountain. Moshe's on the mountain with the war with Amalek, and he's on the mountain with the receiving of the Torah. Moshe is in the heavens. And some suggest that's even why Moshe can't ultimately enter the land of Israel. Because the Maral says that Moshe's too outerworldly. Moshe is the leader for the desert, but he's not the practical leader in the land of on the ground and dealing with the day-to-day the challenges. That's Yeshua. Yeshua is the fighter. Yeshua is the one who stands on the base of the mountain. But Yeshua is being also trained that ultimately you look heavenward for your help. You turn to Hashem for assistance. And the ultimate Jewish leader is the one who combines all of these factors. It's the one who can deal with the day-to-day realities of governance. It's ultimately the one who turns to Hashem for guidance and for directions. So there's probably a lot more here in terms of, you know, the connection between these two stories. But again, I think it's just too obvious with these four characters being in both stories and the ascending of the mountain and the emphasis on Yahushua, right? Yahushua going to fight Amalek. Yahushua, you know, God telling Moshe, tell Yahushua about, don't forget about Amalek. And now here, Yahushua being with Moshe and wondering, you know, why is he, right? Don't get that, he rushes. I don't know, why is he going? So, no, he's going here for a very significant reason. He's being prepared, very early stage, ultimately to be the successful leader of the Jewish people to ultimately bring, not only bring him into the land, but successfully allowing them to inherit the land as well. Wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos.